is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
I welcome my colleagues, Bill Raggio, Senior Fellow Foundation for the Defense of Democracies, and Hussain Haqqani, former ambassador from Pakistan to the United States, now a senior fellow at the Hudson Institute. And we go immediately to the backstory on the unhappiness between Pakistan and India that at present threatens much worse than frowns. This is about Kashmir, a beautiful land from the photographs and from the understanding that it is a romantic place for tourism and people to view vistas of mountains and beautiful lakes, but at the same time is a victim of the partition by the British Empire once upon a time between Pakistan and India, between the Muslims of Pakistan, of India, and the Hindus of India. That partition led to million deaths, maybe, that's an estimate. And Kashmir emerged as part of the territory that was not clearly demarcated to the satisfaction of both sides at the time. This is 1947-49, that period. And Kashmir, after that, was always seen as a threat to break out in dispute over whose territory is being encroached upon by the other. There's Pakistan to the west, there's China to the east, the northeast, there's the Pakistani part of Kashmir to the north, and the India part of Kashmir to the south. However, there is no clear sovereign line between the India and Pakistan part. Very mountainous, very difficult to maintain military force, however they do, all these decades. The saying, I stopped there because I haven't explained why they're fighting over this territory, why it became so important, this small piece of what had been the Raj, the vast British Empire of India. Why is there an explanation for why men fight over territory not many people live on? Good evening to you.
Good evening. Let's begin by what actually happened in partition. India at that time comprised several princely states, which the British had allowed limited sovereignty. And then there was the territory that the British controlled directly. With the princely states, because nominally they all had sovereignty, they were all asked to make a decision to join either India or Pakistan based on two or three factors, one of which was, are they a Muslim majority country? Are they a Hindu majority state? The second factor was, are they contiguous to Pakistan or are they contiguous to India? Kashmir was unique. Kashmir had a Muslim majority and it had a Hindu Maharaja. And it was contiguous to both. And so the question was, will the Maharaja join with India because he has more affinity with the Hindu majority of India? Or will he accede on the basis of the will of the population, which was predominantly Muslim? Pakistan, he hesitated. He wanted to figure out a way of being able to have an independent Kashmir. India wasn't going to allow that, nor was Pakistan. Pakistan invaded to try and create a situation on the ground made it impossible for the Maharaja to join India. But the Maharaja did then join India. The Indian forces came and pushed the Pakistani forces back. The erstwhile state, which is a very large state, was divided between Pakistani-controlled areas and Indian-controlled areas. The United Nations at that time, a relatively new institution, led primarily by the United States, which was wooing Pakistan as an ally in the Cold War, decided to come in and say, well, you know, the solution is let's have a referendum and let the people decide. Both India and Pakistan agreed to it in the beginning, but then later on, India backed out of the idea of referendum. For India, it's very important to have at least one Muslim majority state to be able to stake a claim that it's a secular country and not purely based on religion. Although that claim has become more diluted with a more Hindu nationalist leadership in India, but basically that's how they saw it at that time. Pakistan, on the other hand, considered it unfinished business of partition. All Muslim majority areas should come to Pakistan. Pakistan, having had a military-dominated state, ended up making this a national cause. And so India and Pakistan have fought over this ever since. Since the 1990s, Pakistanis have been trying to stoke terrorism, through terrorism, stoke a rebellion in Kashmir. The people of Kashmir are often very unhappy because when you have large military forces in an area the government, the elected local government is suspended because it doesn't get along with the central government, there is a lot of resentment, and there are a lot of people in Kashmir who feel that they are discriminated against by the Hindu majority of India, even though they are a majority in their own state. So this has been going on for several years. Since 1992, the real issue is India says Pakistan must stop terrorism because it's responsible. Pakistan says there is an indigenous component to this violent resistance. And every now and then, there's a terrorist strike like there was recently on April 22nd. And then India threatens Pakistan over it. Pakistan counter-threatens to complicate things. There's a part of Kashmir that Pakistan ceded to China, which India does not recognize. And China occupies one part of Kashmir, which also becomes a basis for differences between China and India. China fully supports Pakistan. India is seen as the partner for a lot of countries in the world which do not like the idea of Pakistan and India, which have now both become nuclear weapons powers, to go to war.
Bill, you have a comment or question for Hussein?
Yes, Hussein, since the 1990s, what has the Pakistani state done to stoke sectarian violence in Kashmir? How has it implemented jihadist organizations to further the conflict?
Well, originally there were domestic issues which resulted in creating some resentment inside Kashmir, and there were Kashmiri groups. Some of these groups crossed over to the Pakistani side and set up shop there. But then Pakistan got into it in a big way after the Soviet withdrawal from Afghanistan and created Pakistani groups because, of course, the people are very similar, language is similar. They could send a lot of people inside, and there were two components. One was a militant action to try and secure some parts of territory, Kashmiri and Pakistani groups working, jihadi groups working together. Although now the Kashmiri jihadi groups have become very, very weak and it's only Pakistani jihadi groups left. The other was making terrorist strikes against India so that India would be compelled either to talk to Pakistan about the future of Kashmir or figure out a way of letting Kashmir be. The Mumbai attack was the biggest that the Pakistani jihadi group Lashkar-e-Taiba managed to orchestrate in Mumbai. And after that, global opinion has shifted completely in India's direction. And the belief, the common belief is that the real issue is no longer how to solve the matter about the future of Kashmir, even though it remains a disputed territory on the maps of most countries. The issue now is how do you stop Pakistan from helping jihadi groups and organizing them? And some of them have operated quite openly when they have been designated as terrorist entities by the United Nations or the US. They have just changed their name, but they continue to do business in Pakistan quite openly.
Hussein, what does it look like? Because I've only ever seen photographs of firing positions. And from the earliest on, you see a transformation of the Indian Army from a World War I-like helmets, flat, pancake-like, to more sophisticated, as of today, military. But it seems their firing positions are in these impossible-to-reach regions of very high territory, firing from one mountain peak to another. It feels like they're fighting over a moonscape. Is that what it looks like?
Well, the valleys are beautiful. It's like they're more beautiful than Switzerland, some say. Huge lakes, forested areas, lots of green. But then those forested areas also provide cover for potential insurgents and militants and terrorists. yes, there are parts where you are actually sitting in absolutely freezing territory, glaciers, and you are shooting at each other and causing more climate damage than they are causing climate to the other. Somebody told me once that more Pakistanis and more Indians get hurt from frostbite, the soldiers who are posted there, than they do from actual fighting.
So we're looking at them, the two armies, facing each other in a landscape that is forbidding. Is that a fair generalization?
Yeah, absolutely. And that is why since 1948, there has been no major territorial shift. I mean, they've fought four wars. There have been many localized conflicts, four full-fledged wars, many localized conflicts, and very little territory has changed hands because it's just very difficult to do. One of the options that was offered to both sides many, many years ago was each side, because technically the area that's controlled by Pakistan is still claimed by India, and the India area controlled by India is claimed by Pakistan, because if it's about the erstwhile Jammu and Kashmir princely state, that's divided right now. So one solution is to say, let's just normalize the status quo and say the area you have is yours and the area we have is ours. But that is not acceptable primarily to the Pakistani leadership, which has brought up three generations of Pakistanis on the slogan of Kashmir being the unfinished business of partition and Kashmiri Muslims wanting to be part of Pakistan, of which there is no evidence. Our opinion polling in the valley suggests there are people who want independence. There are people who want Kashmir Valley. It suggests that there are people who want to be independent. There are people who want to join India. And just about a third want to join Pakistan.
Speaking with Hussaina Khan, a former ambassador from Pakistan to the United States, and Bill Raggio, senior fellow, Foundation for the Defense of Democracy. When we come back, what is to be done? This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.